The Radio Misfits Podcast Network.
Your buddy, kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
It's the Nick D Podcast.
All right. Hello. How are you? It's the Nick D Podcast. That's me, Nick DiGilio. Welcome to episode number 225 on the Radio Misfits Podcast Network, the best podcast network in the world. Check out all the great and varied and entertaining and informative and funny and musical and dramatic and scary and cool as hell podcasts that are available here at RadioMisfits.com. We have a live streaming service that you should listen to. It's like radio, only a lot cooler, 24/7 for free, RadioMisfits.live. You can hear this podcast twice, not twice, but once a day at 3 p.m. Central. For free. That's the Nick D Podcast every day at 3 p.m. Central. And you can hear my other podcast, which is all about Saturday Night Live. That podcast is called That Show Hasn't Been Funny in Years. And you can hear that every morning at 9 a.m. Central for free at RadioMisfits.live. And if you're a Saturday Night Live fan, you absolutely are required to subscribe to my SNL podcast, That Show Hasn't Been Funny in Years. So welcome. And it is the first Tuesday of the month, which means it is a For the People episode. So that's for you. Every month at the beginning of the month, we like to bring in our two big consumer-related experts who help everybody out, who help me out, help you out with questions about money and questions about surviving this weird world with our consumer issues and our car issues. Man, it's hard every once in a while to figure out what's going on, and you have questions, and some things are weird, and some things are hard to understand. Well, our two geniuses who join me every first part of the month to talk about these things will answer any and all of your consumer-related questions and car-related questions. First up, we will hear from Herb Weisbaum. Herb is the consumer man. He works with checkbook.org. He has been helping people with the consumer issues in this world for, I don't know, four decades. And he's been a part of this podcast since the very beginning. And for many, many, many years when I was on the car wash at WGN doing the radio show there, he answers all your questions and concerns. We're going to talk about a lot of really important consumer issues. We'll give you news. We'll give you all kinds of cool stuff, stuff that he's been working on at checkbook.org. And a special deal just for Nick D podcast subscribers. So Herb Weisbaum will be our first dude to talk about For the People issues. And then it's Tom Appel, who's one of my favorite guests of all time. He is our car guy. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He is the host of the Car Stuff podcast, and we will talk all things car. And if you have questions about buying a car, leasing a car, if you have questions about the what cars are good, what cars are bad, any kind of issues about fixing a car, anything car-related, and anything car news-related, we're going to talk to Tom about, and he joins us every month to do so. We've got some voicemails to talk about with him and all other things. We're actually going to recap the 2024 Chicago Auto Show. It's the first auto show I've gone to in many, many, many years. My first auto show with my girlfriend, Julie. She'd never been to one, and we'll tell you how much we enjoyed it, and Tom will give us his impression of what was great and what was even greater about the Chicago Auto Show. Plus, all kinds of up-to-date great car news and car advice. Plus, Tom likes to watch old TV and let everybody know who some of the stars were who he spotted. So we're going to do another round of Mystery Show and the Great Star Spotter. So Tom Appel from Consumer Guide Automotive, Herb Weisbaum from checkbook.org. They are the guys who help you out living your life in the consumer world, and it's for the people.
Hi, I'm Carrie Russell, and I love Nick's show.
I know you do, baby. I know.
Hi, I'm Carrie Russell, and I love Nick's show.
She especially loves the For the People episodes. She's got t-shirts on that say For the People. That's how great she is. So that's right. We're here to help you out. And hey, by the way, coming up this weekend, it's the Academy Awards, the Oscars. What are your thoughts on the Academy Awards? Why don't you leave some voicemails or some emails or something, and we'll share them. It's Sunday night, March 10th. Jimmy Kimmel is the host. Most of the awards are going to go to that stupid-ass Oppenheimer movie, which is not as good as everybody thinks it is, and that's not an opinion. It's a fact. Anyway, it's going to be a relatively boring presentation, except for the fact that Ryan Gosling is going to perform I'm Just Ken from Barbie, and that'll be the highlight of the show. But, I'll watch it, and I'll bitch about it as I do every year. Last year, that stupid Everything Everywhere All at Once won all the Academy Awards and didn't deserve them, and this year, that stupid Oppenheimer will win all the awards, and it doesn't deserve them. Maybe someday movies that deserve the awards will win them. Until then, I will watch and bitch and moan, and you will listen and probably go, why don't you shut up and quit bitching and moaning? Oppenheimer is good, and I will tell you to fuck off. That's it. That's how it works. But anyway, if you got thoughts on the Academy Awards, you can leave them and leave any other comments that you have, concerns and questions and all kinds of stuff. The voicemail system is open for you 24/7, 773-417-6948. Again, anything you want to say, Oscar-related or anything else, 773-417-6948. You can drop me an email with any questions or comments or concerns, anything you want to say, nickdpodcast@gmail.com. I read every email, I listen to every voicemail, and I play many of them back and read a lot of them back as well. So you are part of this podcast 24/7. Get in there. Also, if you want to be a sponsor, lots of people listen to this podcast, so it would behoove you to advertise with us, which is easy to do. Write us a note saying, I want to be a sponsor. I want to advertise on the Nick D Podcast. sales@radiomisfits.com. Let's partner up. Let's do this. Jason Skaggs does all the music and the sound and the crazy themes. He's the man. I want to thank him. And Ed Silla is the man responsible for all the greatness of Radio Misfits. So what's coming up on this podcast? Well, you heard. It's for the people. Again, 773-417-6948. Anytime voicemail. nickdpodcast@gmail.com. Anytime email. And we will jump into the world of the consumers with Herb Weisbaum as the first part of For the People. March 2024 begins after you are congratulated.
Congratulations. You're about to listen to the Nick D Podcast. It's by far the best decision you've made today. It makes the other podcasts seem like crap. Oh yeah, don't be a jagoff.
Herb Weisbaum is
the consumer man.
Yes, he is your hero when it comes to consuming.
The consumer man.
Oh, yes, Herb is your man.
Yes. He is my man, he's your man, he's everybody's man. He is the consumer man. Joins us the first Tuesday of each month for the For the People podcast episode. And we say hello to the great Herb Weisbaum. Hi, Herb.
Hiya, Nick. Good to be with you again.
Good to be with you, as always, my friend. Thanks for doing this. You are the consumer man. People can follow you as such all over the socials, correct?
Yeah, you can get to my website at consumerman.com. And if you want to sign up for my weekly newsletter that's free, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter. Follow me on checkbook.org and Nick D's podcast. And if you're a bill collector, it's real easy to find me.
Isn't it easy to find everybody if they're a bill collector?
It is. It's just unbelievable.
Herb's been helping people out in the consumer world for decades, and I'm not making that up. It has been a long time, and it's always great to talk to you. And checkbook.org is a wonderful, wonderful place. Tell everybody about checkbook.org.
Sure. We're a nonprofit that rates services in 7 major cities across the country, but we also provide basic information on everything from how to get a good vet to choosing an orthodontist to finding a good plumber to the stories we're going to talk about today. That's what I write for the consumer notebook section. And later on, we'll give you a free link for Nick D podcast listeners who want to check us out for 30 days and get ratings if you live in those 7 big cities. But no advertising influence. We don't accept any advertising. We just call it like it is. You're our client. We try to take care of you, the consumer. And by the way, it just so happens that we're recording this podcast, Nick, on my favorite week of the year.
Favorite week of the year.
Do you know why? And it's not my birthday.
No.
Because this is National Consumer Protection Week.
Oh, it's National Consumer Protection Week. What do you do, Herb, to celebrate National Consumer Protection Week?
I celebrate it every day of the year.
I know. It's no different. It's just a regular day for Herb. Yeah,
exactly. But this year, I'm going to celebrate it by being on your podcast. How about that?
How about that?
And then I'll go to Disneyland.
Okay. Now, what do people do during this week? Are there certain activities? Are people being more aware?
Agencies try to do a whole bunch of consumer public education. They have events and they put out special reports and they do special things on social media for whatever their area of concern is, to try to make people smarter consumers all year long. Hopefully they'll get the lessons this week and then they'll carry them on throughout the rest of their life. So that's what we do all the time. But it's a good thing to refresh things, because we do forget about a lot of things that really could make a big difference in our lives.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, this week, focus on it. But you should focus on consumer things 24/7 all the time. And that's what we're doing. Now, we got a bunch of stuff that we want to get to. But first, we want to talk about a CFPB report, right?
Yep.
Concerning credit card interest. Now, this is something... credit card interest rates. This is something that, of course, affects anybody who has a credit card and anybody in the world. And it fluctuates and it's weird. And sometimes it's confusing. What do we got? What's the report on credit card interest rates? What's the latest on that?
Sure. This is from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB. And a lot of people assume that credit card rates are more or less the same. You know, all the big guys have all the same. It doesn't matter where you shop for your credit card. But you really do have to shop for your credit card, because according to this report, the large banks tend to offer, and I'm quoting here, worse credit card terms and substantially higher interest rates than credit unions and small banks. And the CFPB came to this conclusion after it did a survey of 643 general purpose credit cards from 84 banks and 72 credit unions offered during the first half of 2023. Jeez. On average, the nation's 25 largest credit card issuers charge interest rates 8 to 10 points higher than credit unions and small and medium-sized banks. And this is regardless of people's credit scores. So let me just give you an example. Okay. Let's say you have a good credit score, which is 620 to 719. If you go to a large bank, the average would be 28.20% interest. If you went to a small bank or a credit union, it's 18.15%. If you go to a federal credit union, by the way, that's in the smaller lender category, they are prohibited by law from charging anything more than 18% interest. So you can see why it makes sense to shop around if you carry a balance, which we suggest you don't do. But if you carry a balance because you can't pay it off, it makes a big difference as to where you get your credit card.
Okay. How is that? Okay. I don't understand. Is this purposely confusing? Do they do this so it's purposely confusing? And why
no,
can't
it's
we
not.
Have this?
It's a free market. It's free market. And you can't assume that, you know, you can't assume that one plumber charges the same as another plumber.
Yeah.
You can't assume that Home Depot charges the same as something you get from Ace Hardware. You can't assume that one credit card company charges the same interest rate as another credit card company, which is, I think, the lesson here. And let me do the math for you, because this is really kind of eye-opening. So a cardholder with an average balance of $5,000, the CFPB says, would save $400 to $500 a year if they had a lower rate credit card from a small bank or credit union than one of the big banks. And considering the fact that the latest TransUnion report says that the average cardholder has a $6,300 balance, the savings are going to be even higher than what the CFPB calculated. So it really does have, and some, by the way, some of the biggest issuers, they have interest rates of more than 30% for some people. And that includes Capital One and Citibank, Synchrony Financial, which issues a whole bunch of credit cards for all kind of companies that co-brand with them. So, you know, there's a lot of disparity here in the marketplace. And you really do have to shop around if you're looking to get the best deal when it comes to interest rates.
And how does one do that? What's the best way to shop around? I mean, you know, like, these are big banks. You mentioned, you know, Capital One and Citibank, and there's, you know, USAA, Federal Savings, and all that stuff. These are big, big banks that you would kind of think would be more, maybe a little bit more trustworthy, or maybe you could get a better deal through big banks.
Well, you can go to some of the sites that recommend these things, like Bankrate.com or NerdWallet or WalletHub and that sort of thing. But they tend to favor, you know, they tend to deal with the big national banks. Seriously, if you want to see what the best deal is, find a small bank or find a credit union or two in your area and find out what rates they're charging. You know, the Credit unions, the members or owners, they tend to charge a lot better rates. As I said, if it's a federal credit union, can't go above 18% interest. Check a couple of smaller banks in your area. They tend to give really good service, and they tend to have much better rates. So that's you don't have to spend a little time. But, you know, if you spend an hour online, 30 minutes online to find a better deal, and it saves you $500 a year, I think it's time well worth it.
So, what else did the research find? And I know that I'm looking at your article here, and it says that the banking industry is disputing some of this stuff. So what are they disputing? What else were the other findings?
Well, the other findings were, and then we can talk about what they're having to say, is the other findings were annual fees. So if you pay off your balance in full each month, as half of all cardholders do according to bankrate.com, then you don't really have to worry so much about the interest rates. You need to focus on the fees. And the large fees change dramatically between the big banks and the smaller banks and the credit unions. Large issuers were three times as likely to charge annual fees, and their average fees were higher. The average annual fee at large institutions, 70% higher, according to this survey, $157 versus $94. You don't have to pay fees to get a good credit card. There are plenty of credit cards with no annual fees. And in most cases, you'll pay a fee, as you know, Nick, if you're going to get a rewards card. People like that in some cases because you get miles or points or whatever. But again, if you're not paying your card off in full, then you don't even want to consider a rewards card, because anything you pay in interest will more than eat away any reward you get from the credit card. But if you pay your balance off in full and want a reward, my suggestion is get yourself a 2% cash back rewards card. There are plenty of those, Bankrate told me, that don't charge an annual fee. So there's no annual fee. You don't have to worry about the interest rate because you're paying your card off in full each month. And you get 2% cash back, which means you can spend it anywhere. You don't get stuck with a specific airline. You don't get stuck with a specific hotel. You got cash money. You can buy yourself a hotel room. You can buy yourself an airline ticket. You can pay off your bills with the money you get cash back. That's the smart move as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. All right. So shopping around, like you said, at some of these places is a good way to do it. And but how many people, it says here that you said that a lot of people, like half the people pay off their balance every month.
That's what Bankrate says. Yeah, the latest survey. Yep.
I don't know why I find that hard to believe. I don't know why I think that most people keep balances. I don't know why I would think that.
Yeah. So again, if that's you, don't worry about the interest rate. Worry about the fees and trying to get the lowest fees. By the way, I should point out that the banking industry basically says that the marketplace is completely competitive, and that they offer all kinds of products for all kinds of people. And they just don't think that the CFPB's survey provides any value to people. I think it's really important for everybody listening to know that every institution does not charge the same. And again, if you want to pay an annual fee to get certain perks, if you travel all the time and want to get into that lounge for free or something like that, you get an airline card, you get free baggage because you travel a lot, that makes sense. But if that's not you, it doesn't make any sense to buy an annual fee. By the way, the CFPB, looking ahead, is going to start publishing these surveys every 6 months. They say the goal is to jumpstart competition, and down the road they're already working on a tool that we'll be able to use, a web-based tool that will enable us to compare credit card terms and interest rates, in their words, in an unbiased way. So it would provide an alternative to comparison websites that might get paid money to promote a more expensive product over cheaper alternatives that might be better for you. So this is something that the agency is clearly focused on, and we'll be hearing more from that down the road.
So does that mean that they do these surveys, they do similar surveys or these kinds of surveys every 6 months? Is that how they handle that?
That's what they say. They're going to start doing this and publishing the results every 6 months. Yeah, to give you an up-to-date report on where things stand.
And how do you feel about that? You think that's good? I mean, 6 months is...
Transparency is wonderful. As long as, you know, transparency is great. That's how a consumer can make a smart decision. And this agency is going to do it, and there's no advertiser influence. Nobody's putting a credit card at the top of the list because they got paid money to do it. You can look at the list and you can see what's going on and hopefully remind people that everybody doesn't charge the same rate or the same fees.
Okay. So if you want all the details on that, you can check it out at... You can check it out at checkbook.org, and it's the new report of the credit unions and the small banks offer the best credit card rates. You'll get more about that. Herb wrote the whole thing. And speaking of interest rates and credit cards and things like that, we often get emails or voicemails from subscribers and listeners with questions for you and for all the other For the People stuff that we talk about. And by the way, if you do have a question for Herb that's consumer related, you're worried about your money, you want to be safe, you want a consumer question, anything in the world of consumer world, you can email us at nickdpodcast@gmail.com. I'll send those along to Herb, or you can voicemail us at 773-417-6948 with any question for Herb, the consumer man. And Herb, we did get an email. Would you care to share that? We got an email that I forwarded on to you.
Oh, someone in front of me. Do you have it right there with you?
Yeah, I should have it with me. Let me see if I can find it. I thought you had
it. They wanted to know whether they have a Discover card, as I recall. Yes, the Discover card, right. And they pay it off in full every month. They've been doing it for years and decades or whatever, and they got a promotional rate of 9-something% for 6 months. Did it make any sense to take the promotional rate? There's no harm in doing that. It's not going to do you any benefit unless you're planning to make some gigantic purchase that you know you're going to carry a balance so you could get that good rate for 6 months. I would be afraid that it might encourage you to start carrying a balance because the interest rate seems so low. Hopefully that won't be the situation. That's the only downside I could see is if it encourages you to all of a sudden say, well, I can start carrying a balance or spend more than I can afford to because I can get such a low interest rate. But as far as just putting that onto your card, the low rate, if you don't use it, no big deal. I don't see a real downside to doing something like that.
Okay. All right.
They're doing it, of course, because they're hoping to encourage you. I mean, they know what your track record is. They know what your history is. They're doing it to hope that you will do something that will encourage you to pay 9% interest, because 9% interest to them is better than no interest.
That's
and that's
true.
What they're getting from you right now.
Yeah,
so true. I think that's what that was all about.
Okay. All right. And it was Discover in specifically.
Yes.
So there you go. All right. Some of the other things that you've been writing about. Everybody, you know, should have auto insurance, you would hope.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like required in my state, in Washington, you got to have auto insurance.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's some people just don't, even though it's a law in many, many places that you have to. But, and some people are confused about how to get auto insurance, what's the best auto insurance, how to shop for it. And you wrote a little bit about it. You guys have a piece about it and how much it costs and how do you buy auto insurance? It's just a general question.
Well, the basic message of the story, Nick, was the fact that most people don't shop around for auto insurance once they have the policy. And that is a costly mistake. If you think that the insurance company is going to take good care of you because you've been a long-term customer or you don't have any accidents or whatever, we found out by shopping around that that's not necessarily the case. You will get the best rates by every couple of years shopping around and looking at what different companies will offer you. And let me just give you an example of one we did where I live here in the Seattle area. So we just, created a couple to price shop for them. They had two cars. They were living in the Seattle area. They had a clean driving record, both of them. They would pay $1,120 a year with Progressive, $1,508 with Amica, $1,515 with Geico, or $2,376 with American Family, and $3,662 with Grange. Let me do the math for you. The difference between the cheapest and the most expensive is $2,500. That's worth a little bit of time, maybe an hour to shop around and get a better quote from somebody.
Absolutely. Wow.
And then we found for other people, like if they had a teenage driver, the quotes for the same family, that the representative family you made up, was off by $5,800, the difference between the cheapest and the most expensive. So it really does make sense to shop around every couple of years and just find out if there's any better rate out there for you. A lot of people, as I said, think that you get the better rate because you're loyalty. And there may be a little tiny discount for that kind of thing. But as I wrote many years ago, the insurance companies now have algorithms that they're using that tell the insurance company, Nick DiGilio is not about to leave the company. He's just not going to change. So you don't have to do anything special. Maybe you can even up his rates a little bit, and he's not gone anywhere. So that's the deal with getting a break for being a loyal customer. Don't expect to get it, and certainly don't assume that it's going to be equal to or better than you could get from shopping around with another company.
There is a possibility, and always a possibility, that you'll find a better deal, even though you think you have a good deal presently, correct?
Correct. And again, in many cases, we found $500 or more is up to, and on average, some cases, $1,500 just by taking a little time to shop around. You can try to do that online. If you don't want to do that, get an independent insurance agent. That's what I use. This person looks around at all the different policies available, can point out differences to me and what makes the most sense. They get paid by whatever the company that, you know, they get their commission for doing that. They found me some great coverage. I actually had to change coverage this year because the one company I had does not offer earthquake insurance anymore. They got out of the marketplace. We have earthquake insurance here in Seattle. Sure. And simply by changing companies, I was forced to, I saved over $1,000 just by making that little change and have the exact same coverage that I had before with a very well-rated good company. So it doesn't have to be that much work.
What about the coverage itself? Some people want good coverage. Some people have more coverage than they actually need. And that's something that needs to be tinkered with and make sure, you know, you get everything you need, but don't pay for more than you don't need, correct?
Right. Where a lot of people get fooled is, you know, they say, oh, I can sell my house for, $1 million. But that includes the price of the land. So you don't want to get insurance to cover your land. You want to get the insurance to cover your house and the cost of rebuilding the house. I recommend replacement insurance. So they will pay to put your house back together again or build you a new house if the whole house is destroyed at today's prices the way it was. So that's the key, is not to buy too much home insurance. You're not insuring the land. You're insuring the value of the house. Again, talk about the replacement insurance. Figure out what kind of deductible you can handle, because that will drive down the cost of the policy. You know, will you really be putting in a claim that might drive up your insurance coverage for a little $500 problem, or do you really want to like make it $1,000? Compare. They can tell you how much difference it'll be in the premium if you do that kind of thing. The other thing you can do is some companies will offer a discount for bundling, just like the cable companies do. So if you get your home insurance and your car insurance from the same company, you may get a 5 or 10% discount by going with the same company. We advise that you'd be much better off shopping around and probably get a better price than the 5 or 10% discount you're going to get with bundling with that same company. So again, if you're trying to save money, the bottom line is the bottom line. And, that's just that what you have to do to save yourself money.
You know, it's so convenient and I'm telling you, every TV commercial for any kind of auto insurance or car insurance or life insurance or anything is bundling. That's the big thing. Every single, there are car and life insurance commercials on almost seemingly at every commercial break of everything that I watch. And the word bundle is dropped in almost every ad that I see. It's easy to go, oh, that must be the best way to do it. It's convenient. It's one place. It's bundled together. That's what I'm going to do. But that's not necessarily the best, in terms of money.
And my assumption would be if they get you to bundle, now you have to change two policies. It's probably more likely to keep you and make you be that person who doesn't think about shopping around than if you were changing a separate policy. I would assume that's part of the logic with it, get you in the family and do that. By the way, I want to give you, since you're based in Chicago, I was looking around for this and I just found it. We did one of those price surveys for a couple in Chicago.
Yeah.
And they have a teenager. Sorry about that. They have a teenager on their policy. They would pay $2,386 a year with Allstate, $2,593 with AAA. $2,632 with Elephant, and $6,744 a year with Farmers. That is a grand total difference of $4,358. No bundling would make up for that.
Wow. Wow. That's crazy. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, and another people, people who like to keep, maybe they like the insurance company that they're with or in fact, they get complacent. People do get complacent and they don't want to deal with it. It's a hassle. And it's like, okay, I got this, I have this insurance, I have this bundle or whatever, something I really don't want to think about. I know I'm insured and that's it. But you have to do this. You have to keep up with what's happening. How long should you hold onto a policy before maybe looking into changing it or finding a better deal?
I don't think there's any hard, fast rule, but I'd say 2 or 3 years, something like that. Just do it. And again, if you have an independent agent, my guy shops around every year when it renews and just lets me know what the deal is and what the marketplace is. I mean, things in the insurance industry are changing dramatically with the costs that they have. We got more people driving again, back to almost pre-pandemic levels. We got cars that are more expensive. We got repairs that are more expensive. We got wildfires with more fires and cost of construction going up. I mean, this stuff changes many times a year. It's not a bad idea if you have an independent broker to have them shop around every year and just, see what's going on. Let me just give the web address, and we'll give it again. But for people who are looking for ratings for the auto insurance companies in your state, so if you live in, I got to figure out the state. So it's Illinois, Minnesota, Washington State, California, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, or the District of Columbia. We have the ratings for insurance companies in those areas. Checkbook.org/NickDPodcast. Most of our ratings are left for subscribers, but we're going to give you a free 30-day trial subscription. No questions asked. No, you don't owe us anything. We hope you like us, and you can stick with us, but you don't have to. And for anybody else, you can read all this information, and there's a full podcast on buying insurance, and all you have to do is go to checkbook.org, and it's right there on the homepage. You can listen to our boss, Kevin Brassler, talking about all the advice and also read all about it as well.
Okay. And again, checkbook.org/NickDPodcast if you want to take advantage of this really cool offer. Checkbook.org/NickDPodcast. The other thing really quickly is that if you've had insurance for a long time, also you might want to, and you guys point this out in the article, that you might want to consider dropping some of your insurance, some of the extra coverage, if your car continues to drop in value, right? I mean, a lot of people are like, they don't think about that. You know, you think about the car is not worth what it once was, but you have the same coverage. You might want to lower that, right?
Yeah, you could consider dropping collision and comprehensive when your car's vehicle value drops, say, below $5,000. It may not be worth paying for that, but that's all an individual decision. Of course, if you have a car, it's a clunker, and it's the only way you can get around to work or something, that's different also. But that's something you can do, you know, raise the limits and drop some of the coverage. One big thing that you have to make sure, and we point this out in the article on Checkbook, is that you cannot let your coverage lapse even by a day, because insurance companies hate that, and for some reason it makes you a greater risk. So if you're changing coverage from one company to the other, start the policy with the one company, and then decline the coverage with the cancel the coverage with the other company. You don't want to have any gap in coverage whatsoever, and you don't have to wait until that first policy is coming due for renewal. If you shop around and find a much better price, you can cancel the policy as soon as you get the new policy, and by law they've got to refund whatever is left on your coverage that you didn't use. So they'll give you a refund for that money. So, but don't let it lapse even by a day. Get the new one first, and then get the cancel the second one. That is critically important.
Okay, make sure you do that. And again, check out checkbook.org for all that information. Segueing into another car-related story, auto dealers are forcing the FTC to hit the brakes on new consumer protection rules for car buyers. What's the details on this?
Well, the Federal Trade Commission came out with a brand new regulation called the CARS rule. CARS rule stands for Combating Auto Retail Scams. And it was due to take effect in July, but the auto dealers went to court to block it because they say it's anti-competitive and this shouldn't be allowed. The Federal Trade Commission, when it announced this, it said that you and I and everybody else nationwide would save about $3.4 billion a year by targeting persistent and illegal bait and switch scams and junk fees in the car buying process. That's the quote from the Federal Trade Commission. Yeah. Basically, what they're trying to do is stop two things here. First of all, that bait and switch, which the classic bait and switch is you see an ad for a car, you call up and say, I want to come see this car. And then you get there and it's like, oh, Mr. DiGilio, we just sold it to some little old lady 5 minutes ago, but we got this really cool sports car that's, $30,000 more, and I bet you're just going to love it. That's the classic bait and switch. Mm-hmm. But they can also do that with terms. They can do bait and switch with the financing. They can do bait and switch with other terms of the deal, that kind of thing, which, again, they're in the driver's seat because they do this 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, the salespeople, and you do it once every, the average person holds their car like 12 years now or something, so you do it so rarely that you don't know, everything to look for and what they're doing. So that's the one thing. And the other thing is tacking on all of these things when you get into the finance office that you may not even know you're paying for and that you may not even need or want. So there's that kind of thing. So basically, if this rule takes effect, if the court rules against the auto dealers and the Federal Trade Commission is allowed to go forward with this, it's going to stop this bait and switch kind of thing. They have to tell you what are optional add-ons, such as extended warranties, and that you're not required to get them if you don't want to get them. And it's going to require them to not do what the commission called bogus add-ons. These are add-ons that provide no benefit to the buyer. It only prevents provides income to the seller. So they gave these real-life examples of what they consider, the FTC considers, worthless add-ons. Mm-hmm. And that would be warranty programs that duplicate the manufacturer's warranty, service contracts for oil changes on electric vehicles that don't use oil. And I asked one of the head of the FTC, said, are you kidding me? Yep, this really happened, sir. These have all really happened.
That's amazing.
Dealers charge for automatic oil changes for an electric vehicle, nitrogen-filled tires that contain no more nitrogen than normal air, and software audio subscriptions on vehicles that can't support those subscriptions. So these are the kind of things. And then, wow. And then finally, you, the consumer, would have to consent, expressly consent, for any charges that are added on to that vehicle purchase. So basically what it does is it says no more tricks, you know, and it says all dealers got to play on a level playing field. And the commission's logic is that if there's illegal action going on by one dealer, it hurts all the dealers who are trying to play honestly. So if we require all dealers to play by the same rules, then the consumer is taken care of and all dealers can compete fairly and honestly and are not being losing business to dealers that are dishonest. Again, from my point of view, transparency and not breaking the law is prime to me. These kind of practices, by the way, are basically illegal under the Federal Trade Commission Act, but they figured if they put it all in one place under one new rule, it would make it easier to prosecute bad actors, and also nobody could say that we didn't know this was, you can't do this kind of thing. So we're going to spell out specifically, not just say unfair and misleading trade practices. No, here's what we're telling you, you won't be able to do. So we'll wait and see if the how the court rules and what happens from that. But it's not going to happen anytime soon as it was supposed to in July. So you, the car buyer, have to be really careful and make sure. I would never go in to buy a car without a friend. I always have somebody there watching out because you get emotionally involved, Nick. You know, it's, oh, the color red. We only have the blue. And you get all tied up in loop-de-loops. And you need somebody there to be paying attention to what's going on and maybe say to you, you know, Herb, as my friend did once, it's time to walk away. This just isn't working out. Mm. We walked out the door because it was like I got so emotionally involved. I was like, nope, this is not going in the right direction. Let's leave and go someplace else.
Do we know how long? That. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
How long was I sitting there before I walked out the door?
No. You were in the middle of something, but go ahead.
So that's number one. Number two, go over all the paperwork. They give you reams of paperwork, but specifically look for anything that's added on that you didn't ask for. And just go through it and look, you know, especially. And then don't go in, as so many people do, and say, they say, hi, how much can you afford in a monthly payment? If you say $395, I guarantee you, Nick DiGiulio, they will find out a way to make that $390 when they do the paperwork in the back. Say, I'm looking to get the best value on the vehicle I want, and we'll trade in. I'll think about it, and we'll deal with it later. It's three separate transactions. I'm buying a vehicle. I'm trading in a vehicle. I'm getting the financing. Try to see if you can get financing from someplace before you get to the dealership. If you belong to a credit union, you are our small bank, you will probably get much better terms than you will from the dealer. If there's a rebate or something that's on that vehicle, check the website of the manufacturer to make sure that you know what it is. I had a dealer play fast and loose years ago when I was helping my father-in-law buy a car, and he claimed there was no rebate on the vehicle. There was a $750 rebate on the vehicle. I told my father-in-law to walk out the door, and all of a sudden, oh, yeah, the paperwork was here in my desk drawer. Yeah, that rebate's been on for 6 months, pal. Ugh. You know, that kind of stuff. You just got to be careful because there are some dealers, not all, but there's some dealers that play fast and loose. And just be careful and stop and think. And if something doesn't feel right in your gut, trust it. Walk out the door. There are plenty of cars now. We're past the pandemic. There are plenty of vehicles that you can buy from really good, reputable, honest dealers. You don't have to get the high pressure routine to buy right now or sign right now or do anything like that.
Yeah. Now, the Federal Trade Commission, how long have they been working on things like the CARS rule? Is this something that they've worked on for a long time?
These rules take years. I mean, what they have to do is they have to say we're going to propose. They propose a rule. And then they say, you know, here's what we're thinking of doing. And then they hold hearings, many cases across the country and or in Washington, D.C. They take comments. They have an open comment period. Some cases it's hundreds of comments. Some cases it's thousands of comments. The staff looks at the comments. And they may go, you know, the industry has a good point here. That would be a problem for somebody. Or they may say, you know, the consumers have a good point here. We weren't strong enough with this rule. It doesn't allow this practice, you know, allows this practice to keep happening. Then they write the final rule. and then they put the final rule out, and then it goes, you know, that takes effect from that point out. So it's a very, which is why things don't happen quickly. It's a very long and cumbersome process, but it's designed to make sure people have at least a chance to put in their input. The commission or the agency may not listen to it, but at least they have a chance to make their points known.
Right. It's interesting to, you know, whenever we talk about stories like this, and we talk about stories like this all the time, I'm always astonished when I hear that what, you know, businesses and dealers in certain situations can get away with and what they have gotten away with. It's just, it's kind of crazy to me that it's just people look the other way or don't know about it. Like, but like these, hold these, all, you know, like you just mentioned the bogus anons. That's just crazy. I mean, it's, I guess there's no conscience whatsoever in a lot of ways. It's like, let's get as much money out of these people as possible. And it's astonishing to look at these things in detail. Whenever I read stories that you guys cover, it's amazing to me that people get away with this.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why we need, you know, AGs are suing car, have sued car dealers. The Federal Trade Commission regulates them as well. I've been doing this so long that I remember when I first started and some of the practices in the Washington state area, there were some dealers here that were absolutely horrendous and they were taken to task to court by the attorney general's office. But they would literally have somebody who was young and inexperienced. So some older person, some young kids or whatever would come in to buy a car. And while they were looking at the vehicle, they would ask for the car key so they could take the car around the back to you know, how much the trade-in was going to be. And then when it was all done, if they said they didn't want the vehicle, they'd say, oh, well, we sold your car while you were in here looking at the new vehicle, so you've got to buy this new vehicle now.
That's unbelievable.
I mean, it happened like more than once. I would have said, I mean, of course you're panicked, I would have said, where's the phone? I'm calling 911. I'd like to report a car theft. But that's the kind of tricks that some of these really, really bad, and then hopefully most of that's gone now. But this was, you know, several decades ago. But that's the kind of things that these slimy car dealers would resort to back in the old days. Some absolutely horrendous tricks.
Oh, you know my favorite comedy movie of all time. You know, for me, the funniest movie ever made is called Used Cars. That's my favorite comedy of all time with Kurt Russell. Yes. And some of the things that they do in that, their dealership happened to be like in Arizona. And so they would paint their cars with water-based paint, and they would buy, they would get taxis and then paint them blue and sell them. And they would do stuff like that. So I would expect it from a ridiculous movie like Used Cars, but like in the, but that kind of stuff was going on and still kind of goes on in different forms now.
Yeah. Again, you know, it's, they're out to make the sale and you're out to get the best deal you possibly can. And you just got to be really careful and take your time. And, you know, if you invested 3 or 4 hours or 5 hours in it and the deal isn't working out, you're going to be a lot better off walking away than getting stuck with a bad deal and gone. Because once you walk off the lot, car's yours.
That's right.
And it's going to be really hard to unwind the deal.
That's true. So, that's absolutely true. Okay. Well, keep an eye on that and the CARS rule from the FTC. And, you know, you can check it out. Checkbook.org has all the information. And you also talk about emergency savings funds and how to start one. What's your advice on that? And what exactly is an emergency savings fund? Is that different from a regular savings account or things like that?
Yeah, that's for when the rainy day happens and you have an unexpected medical bill or a car repair you weren't planning on. Or in my case, as in this week, my hot water heater just went out on the fritz. And that's going to be like, you know, a $1,500 or more job to have it replaced. So you have to have that rainy day fund so you don't have to take out of whatever savings or try to put it on a credit card and pay the horrendous interest rates if this kind of thing happens. And according to a survey by Bankrate.com, about 4 in 10 Americans, 44%, said they had enough in savings to pay for an unexpected expense of $1,000 or more. So that's a lot of people who don't have enough. Only 1 in 4 have enough to pay $1,000 expense or more. Significant car repair these days or something around the house or a medical bill can be a lot more than that. So the goal is to simply get started. Just simply find a way that works for you to set up a separate account with your rainy day fund, savings account that you could put money into. My suggestion is, because you get almost no money at a regular savings account at a bank, open a high yield savings account online. Some of these accounts now are paying 4.5-5% interest, so you can get some actual return on your money, and set up an automatic system. So for instance, every paycheck, $25 or whatever, automatically gets deposited into this rainy day fund or something like that. And after a while, once you get into the habit, you'll see, oh, look, I now have a, you know, just $20 a week. In a year, you'll have $1,000 in that emergency fund. And then maybe you'll say, that's pretty cool. Let me try to get my goal now is $2,000.
Yeah.
Just so you have a little bit of cushion so that you don't have to find yourself, you know, taking out a payday loan or taking out high debt interest or something, because some of these unexpected things that happen all the time happen. It's just the best way to be prepared, or job loss or something like that. You know, the experts say 3 to 6 months. That's a daunting thing to start with. So that's why I say just start. Do $20, $25 a paycheck, stick it in the thing, and have a goal, $500, $1,000. And then once you get there, double it or up it again and keep working that way. You'll be so glad you have that rainy day fund.
Now, you mentioned NerdWallet has an emergency fund calculator.
Yes, that'll just sort of give you an idea of the different things and how you can use it to optimize how much you want to save and what you're trying to protect and that kind of thing. So, you don't need a calculator to do that, but they have a calculator online for some people. You know, like you put in your month or your rent or something like that, and it walks you through the different things that you might need that emergency, how much you pay a month for your gas or electric. It might just give you some idea of, well, if I lost a job, here's how much I'm talking about every single month, and maybe encourage you just a little bit to get going with that thing.
Yeah. Well, you got a link in there in the article as well, which is also helpful. And how many people don't really? I mean, you know, like in all the years you've been covering this, are there still a significant amount of people out there that don't have an emergency fund, that don't have money for a rainy day? I know there are. There are a ton of people out there.
The bank rate survey said, you know, the opposite of 64, so that's 66% of the people would not have a rainy day account. So, you know, that's pretty big.
Yeah, that is big. All right, well
it'll be actually 56%. I'm terrible at math because that's why I'm a broadcaster. But still, more than half the people.
That makes two of us.
I don't do math.
No, that makes two of us. I'm the same way. I am terrible at math.
I now go, hey, Google, how much is, and she gives me the answer, you know.
There you go. By the way, you just saying that, you know how many people's equipment just started moving because of that?
Yes. One thing I just want to tell you about before we go, because we talked about this before, and I just did an update the other day. Remember we talked about Comcast and the 10G network and the fact that it really wasn't a 10G network, and
absolutely.
I thought it was mumbo jumbo, and I jumped. Yeah. Well, they just got told by the Advertising Bureau, the National Advertising Division of the Better Business Bureau, had told them in October that they thought it was not a reasonable basis for the claims. They appealed to the National Advertising Review Board. These are BBB organizations, a voluntary review board. And in late January, they said that Comcast should discontinue the use of the 10G term when referring to their network, and they can only use it if it's not used deceptively. So it looks like from some of the advertising I've seen, they've pulled off the 10G network. They say they're still going to use it sometimes, but you don't get 10G in most cases, unless you pay a lot of extra money and put a fiber optic cable to your house, you're not going to get 10G. I feel very good that the voluntary regulatory system in that case through the BBB worked. If you want to find out more about it, it's on checkbook.org.
Okay. And by the way, the listener's name who you helped out was Jim. He was in Michigan about the Discover card.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
So, and one last time, checkbook.org/NickDPodcast. If you are in Chicago, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Seattle, San Francisco, Boston, Philly, or Washington, D.C., your Nick D friends, you can get a 30-day free trial subscription and check out all the products and services we rate in your area. And if you like it, hopefully you'll join. And everybody else, just go to checkbook.org or my website, consumerman.com, and keep up to date. And hopefully you'll join my my weekly newsletter, and you'll hear from me. And if you have a question, you can write me right through the website. And I try to answer every single email that comes in from your podcast.
You're great about doing that. But before we get out of here, I wanted you to mention the podcast. And, you know, particularly there's a podcast stuff that concerns whatever happened to customer service. And some of the other, tell everybody how they can listen to the podcast and what you're talking about, and particularly this whatever happened to customer service, because I do have to say that there's this company that we've been not working with, but a listener subscribed me and Esmeralda to this monthly snack club that comes from universalyums.com. Well, I happen to live in a building where a lot of stuff just gets stolen from our lobby, including mail. And someone stole the box of snacks from Universal Yums, and with one inquiry, they sent free of charge another box.
Wow!
Okay. And that's great customer service because it's yes. like somebody ripped it off, and that's great customer service. And that's an example that customer service does exist. But you guys talk about whatever happened to it on the podcast and tell everybody about that podcast.
It's not the norm. I mean, customer yeah. service is now an afterthought for many companies. The goal is to sell the item and then worry about customer service or not worry about it all afterwards. I think we all have held for hours on telephone lines. We get AI that now answers when we do a text chat, and the AI has no idea what you're talking about. You go to a store, the manager or the salesperson like, it doesn't give you the time of day. So a lot of surveys have indicated that it's pretty sad. This is my favorite podcast. I'm only up to episode 57. You're way ahead of me because you're so prolific. But it's my favorite episode so far because we actually had people who were able to call in and share their customer service experiences, their nightmares. And I shared three of my personal horror stories that happened to me. And, you know, you always give me homework, so I'm going to give you one. I want okay. you to listen to this and let me know what you think because I listen to all your podcasts. But this okay. was my favorite one. And it was one of the things I said, one of the callers said, well, you know, you get on hold and they play that same couple of chords over and over and over again. It's like a Chinese water torture. They're trying to make me hang up. And the guy said, the customer service expert said, yep. yeah, that's deliberate. There's yeah. a reason for that. Yeah. You know, so it was one of my, if you go to consumerpedia.org, it's right on the homepage of my website, consumerman.com. I just really like that one. And I think customers, you know, the old saying was, if somebody likes something, you know, they'll tell four people, and if they hate it, they'll tell 10. And this customer service expert said, nowadays, they'll go on social media and they'll tell the world. And companies need to realize that there can be some real damage to their reputations if they treat people poorly. And they shouldn't have to come to that. You should be able to get your problem taken care of if you're reasonable. And it's also linked to a really nice article that we put up for Consumer Protection Week on how to complain properly. We can talk about that next time if you want. But, you know, there is a right way to complain and a wrong way to complain. Right. And if you do it the wrong way, you're going to get shown the door. So we have an article linked to that as well.
Awesome. Okay. Always great to talk to you, Herb. Check out Consumer Man and the Consumer Man everywhere and checkbook.org. And also check out checkbook.org/NickDPodcast and sign up for that. Herb, always a pleasure, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you, Nick. Talk to you next month.
All right, buddy. Take care. Herb Weisbaum, he's the best. He's your Consumer Man. And now we move on to our next guest for the For the People episode here in March. Tom Appel's the car guy, and here he is.
Tom Appel.
We're going to talk about cars.
That's right. Tom Appel, the Sultan of what? Yeah, something like that. Cylinder. It's Tom Appel. Tom Appel joins us every month. It's the first Tuesday of the month, which means it's for you. It's for you. It's for the people. Tom Appel is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He is co-host of the Car Stuff podcast that you can find out. And he is a car expert and a guy who's been in the car world forever. And we love talking to him every month. Welcome back to the podcast, Tom.
Well, thanks for having me, Nick.
How you been, sir?
I've been good. Very busy, which I guess is good.
Yeah. Well, is it more busy than usual? And is there a reason why you're very busy? Is something happening? Or
there is a plethora of test cars that I need to drive, and they're showing up. So, and this is really inside baseball, but writing a review of a test car takes much longer than some sort of news update or feature. So
I see.
Yeah, and I really want to get to them in a timely fashion.
So you've got like a backup of some test cars that you want to do. Now, is the spring or late winter, early spring, is that a particularly busy time? Is it busier than usual for test cars?
Yeah, actually, spring is pretty busy.
Okay.
The manufacturers will tease the cars and sometimes have drive events at remote locations later in the year. But the actual production cars that are ready to go start showing up in the local test fleets about now.
Wow. Are you looking forward to anything in particular? If you've got a backlog of these, it's spring, it's time for the test drives. Is there anything that's standing out for you that you're looking forward to driving?
So many pickup trucks are newer, refreshed this year. It's amazing. And I haven't driven any of them. There's just this dam waiting to break of stuff I have to do. And I'm excited to do it. But it's both nerve-wracking and exciting because I'm going to get to drive this stuff, but then I got to do something with that information.
Right. You actually have to work. After that, it's work. Yes. Yeah. Now, have you ever owned a pickup truck?
I did, actually, yeah. As a younger man, I owned a Ford Ranger. Ford Ranger. Short bed, short cab, little manual transmission. I loved that truck. It was a great truck.
But so so pickup trucks are good. You enjoy driving a pickup truck. And so you're looking forward to some of the new ones that you're going to be driving.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. All right, cool. Let's talk about what you've been driving. We'll get to some. Well, first of all, tell everybody about Consumer Guide Automotive and your podcast. Give everybody the background details on how they can read stuff and see stuff and hear stuff from Tom Appel.
Yeah, Consumer Guide's been around since 1967. I started working for the company like 23 years ago. It's now entirely my problem. Who knew when I took an editorial job that I would someday own the thing?
Yeah.
But I do love the work I do. But yeah, we review almost every car we can get our hands on, which is almost everything that you can buy. We do our annual Best Buy picks, which is super useful if you're looking for a new car or truck. And I try to have fun with the news, too. So that's there, too. That's all at consumerguide.com. You mentioned the podcast. I co-host that with Jill Simonillo. She's a Chicago area auto reviewer. And that's weekly, comes out Tuesday mornings, and we try to have fun with that.
Yeah, and it's a great podcast. You don't have to be deep into cars. You don't have to be a car expert. You don't have to be a freak or anything like that. It's a very entertaining and really wonderful podcast that you guys do a great job with.
Oh, thank you.
And that is Car Stuff Podcast. You can check it out every Tuesday. And Consumer Guide Automotive for all of your car needs and great stuff and test drives and all that cool stuff. So check it out there. All right. I always ask you what you've been driving, and it's been a month. So, what are you currently driving, and what were you driving for the couple of weeks before that, just to give us an update on the new vehicles that Tom is driving?
I have a really interesting vehicle. People who've been paying attention know that Dodge is pretty low on products right now. The Dodge Challenger and Charger have been discontinued. That was the sporty cars that they based most of their volume and their advertising and showroom traffic on. Those are gone. But they did introduce a compact crossover, something Dodge has desperately needed. It's called the Hornet, and it's only available in very sporty trim, so it doesn't come cheap. But there is a RT, that is a plug-in hybrid, that I'm driving right now. So 30-ish miles of range if you plug it in, a 2-liter turbo if you just want to go fast. Interesting car, a little bit over the top sporty wise. I don't think it's a very good competitor for something like a Honda CR-V or a Toyota RAV4, but if you're looking for something sporty and you're young and you can put up with the extroverted caffeinated nature of the vehicle, kind of a fun thing to drive.
What makes an extroverted cap so much?
It's really, really deliberate and immediate throttle response, so it's very jumpy, very sporty exhaust note that's just a little bit too loud for some people. Also, the ride is a little firmer than you would expect because it's very sporty, so it's very much a young man's car. It's not a good family vehicle.
Not a good family vehicle. How long has the Hornet been around?
A year.
A year, so it's that new.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. They dug that name out of the trenches. The Hornet used to be an American Motors car.
That's right. I remember the Hornet.
An AMC, Chrysler consumed AMC. Actually, Renault did, and then Chrysler bought it from Renault. Right. But AMC discontinued operations in the U.S. like right around 1983, 4, something like that.
How often do names of cars get recycled by other manufacturers? Does that happen very often? I mean, the Hornet, because when I think Hornet, I don't think of a sporty, badass car. You know, I remember the Hornet from years ago, and it was not to be confused with any kind of, young person's car.
There's a couple of good examples of this. Chrysler used the Aspen name about 10 years ago for a crossover, a midsize crossover. And Aspen goes way back to the 70s. And if you watch Bob's Burgers, Bob Belcher drives an Aspen wagon.
He does, doesn't he?
So that's a weird one. And then Maverick. Ford is using Maverick for its smallest pickup, its little front drive based
That's
pickup.
That's right.
Yeah. And the Maverick goes back to the 70s, too. And it wasn't really the best remembered car.
We've talked about the fact that my buddy from many, many years ago, over 40 years ago, about 40 years ago, had a Maverick, and it was completely bondoed. Remember we talked about that? And very frequently we speak of Bondo on this segment on my podcast, because I love Bondo and it's whatever it's used for, and we've talked about, and remember we talked about it kind of regularly for a while. I think it was right around last year, early last year, about a year ago, we were talking about Bondo pretty regularly, and we started getting like emails and voicemails from people who were kind of Bondo fanatics. For a quick refresher course for people who might not know, tell everybody kind of quickly what Bondo is and that it's still around, which I was surprised by as we've talked about it. But Bondo, for people who might not know.
Bondo is the craziest stuff. And when I was in high school, which would have been when you were in high school,
yes, yes.
A lot of people would buy terrible cars and then just fill in holes or yep. gaps in the metal with Bondo. And Bondo was this weird polymer. He used a little bit like we would use plaster of Paris inside of a house. Right. And you would just sort of flush over the right. imperfections in the body of the car. And the thing about Bondo too is that it was very heavy. So there's always these jokes about how much a car weighed after it had been Bondoed. But the repairs always looked terrible. Yeah. I don't think there was ever a good Bondo repair.
And then you were supposed to somehow match it with the paint color of your yeah. of your vehicle, and it never did match. Like, it's like you could, from a mile away, you can see all the giant spots or the areas where it was Bondoed. You're like, no, that, I don't care how many times you paint it or you buy the paint that's supposed to completely match what your finish is. That is Bondoed. No question.
Yeah, my dad Bondoed a chunk of our 74 Valiant, our Plymouth Valiant. And I'm pretty sure I caused the dent. And my dad was an old school German craftsman, right? He's a tool and die guy. And he probably yeah. did the nicest Bondo job ever.
Yeah.
But the thing about Bondo is a week later, a month later, it starts to contract a little bit. So no matter how good your repair was,
yeah.
it started to look just a little bit weird and aged.
Yeah.
And no matter what you painted it, it never matched. Even if
never.
It matched, never.
Never, never. Well, my friend who had the Maverick, we get on this conversation because of the Ford Maverick. My buddy had a Maverick. I can't remember what it was. I think it was a 78, 79 Maverick or something.
Okay, the very end of that run, yeah.
Yeah, 77. Yeah, it was the late 70s Maverick is what it was. And like, he Bondoed the hell out of that thing. And then at one point, like, he attempted to paint it. He attempted to paint it, and then he just stopped it and, like, Bondoed, like, the whole... And so instead of, like, trying to match the paint, he just matched the Bondo. You know what I mean? Like, he went the opposite. He's like, screw it. I'm not going to try and paint this thing. I'll just make it all Bondo, and then it'll be at least consistent. So his car was virtually made of Bondo, this Maverick. The body had been replaced almost entirely by Bondo. And I just... Anytime someone mentions Maverick... I immediately think of my friend Rich's Bondoed Maverick. So that's that. But the Dodge
Magic
Hornet
stuff.
Dodge Hornet is what you're driving now. And before the Hornet, because it's been a month since we've spoken, any other mentionable vehicles that you were driving or cool stuff?
I'm driving a vehicle that I get yelled at about for interesting reasons. And I'm driving the Hyundai Palisade in top-level limited trim. And the Hyundai Palisade is a seven-passenger, three-row crossover that is exceptionally good at doing what it does. And in top-level trim, it kind of is arguably a luxury vehicle. And the conversation I've had with other journalists, and I'm just going to throw out a name here, my buddy Kirk Bell, who writes for Internet Brands, has given me a hard time about preferring certain Cadillac vehicles to the Palisade because the Palisade is so good and the Cadillac vehicles are so expensive. And I tend not to cross what I think are the buyer bases for these things. And I think Cadillac luxury and I think Hyundai kind of mainstream buyer. But he makes a great point. If you're not brand conscious, this Hyundai is very good.
Oh.
It's very quiet, very comfortable, very roomy, and very nicely appointed inside.
Mm-hmm. Well, so do people give you, okay, how often does that happen? How often when you're driving in a certain car, do people give you crap about driving certain cars? You get guff?
You get guff, and I think you would expect this because you write a lot about movies. You get guffs from fans of certain vehicles,
yeah.
and they don't want to hear, you certainly don't want to ever say anything online bad about Tesla, right?
Yeah.
Because people will hunt you down.
That's true. It's true.
But you run into brand fans that sometimes don't want to hear bad stuff about their vehicle.
Yeah.
And that's an issue.
I know what you're talking about. I hated Oppenheimer, so I know exactly what you're talking about. I've heard a lot of crap from all the Christopher Nolan fans out there, so I know exactly what you're talking about. And before that, what else were you driving between that and the Hornet and what you're driving? What else were you driving that you would like to mention? Anything?
Oh, wow. What did I just recently finish? Oh, this is a very interesting car because it doesn't have a lot of name legacy, but the Chevy Trailblazer.
Oh.
This is a subcompact crossover. It slots at the second from the bottom in the Chevy lineup. There's a new redesigned Trax that slots beneath it. But if you're looking for a car that costs between, say, $28,000 and $35,000 and does a lot of really nice stuff well, it rides well, it's quiet, it fits big people, gets reasonably good fuel economy, and the interior is pretty nice, I think the Chevy Trailblazer is kind of undiscovered. And there are other vehicles out there that are getting a little bit more press, like the Hyundai Kona, which is very good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in that class. And now there's the Toyota Corolla Cross, which is another vehicle. But this is a growing segment, this slightly smaller than compact crossover segment. And I think it's growing partly because of price and partly because they're just super easy to drive.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, there are some vehicles that Tom's been driving and is driving. And again, all of this stuff is written about, even though that's the hard part for Tom. He has to motivate himself.
Takes time.
Driving all these cars. And it's like, damn it, I have to do some work after this. So it all pays off. And you can read all about it at Consumer Guide Automotive for all of that cool stuff. Tom, you know, I always tell people that if they have questions for our For the People, for our For the People guests, and if you have questions that are car-related, auto-related, anything about that kind of stuff, you can always leave a voicemail at 773-417-6948, 24 hours a day. You can drop us an email with any of your questions as well, nickdpodcast@gmail.com. We do have a voicemail with a question, and I know that hopefully you'll be able to answer it because your record is pretty damn strong.
Okay.
For really nicely answering questions from our listeners and subscribers. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, listen to this voicemail, and then hopefully we can help out this lovely listener. And again, if you, as a listener or a subscriber, have any questions related to cars or consumer issues, 773-417-6948, or email us at nickdpodcast@gmail.com. All right, here is Sarah, I believe. Let's treat.
Hi, Nick. This is Sarah from Milwaukee, long-time listener, first-time caller. And I have a question for Tom Appel, the car guy, who I'm so glad you have on the podcast. I really loved him when he was a guest on your radio show. My assumption is my next car will probably be an electric vehicle. And I'm wondering if Tom could provide any thoughts on what we as consumers might want to look for in an electric vehicle. What stands out? What's a good thing? What's something to stay away from? In terms of, I guess, batteries, I don't know. And would love to hear if he would recommend any criteria differently if someone's looking at a car versus an SUV versus a truck. Thanks so much, Nick. Love you. Love Esmeralda. Thanks so much. Bye.
Thank you, Sarah. That was a lovely little call from Sarah. Okay, a basic let's get some questions answered about electric vehicles.
Yeah, great question. Nice to hear from Sarah. One of the things I want to point out is that Milwaukee is not yet very strong in electric infrastructure.
Oh.
I have colleagues that work and live up there, and I have family that lives up there, and I have a hard time finding charging stations in the Milwaukee area. So this is less a question about cars and more a question about charging access. And if Sarah intends to put in a charger at home, she's probably in good stead. Because once you drive away from Milwaukee on the highway, there's a lot of charging stations. And in a moment, we'll probably talk about how that situation just got better for a lot of cars.
Yeah.
But going electric, daily range is usually not an issue because most cars have more than 200 miles of range. So during the week, almost no one ever hits that. And the question is, how much highway range do you need? Where are you going to go? And if you're going to hit the highway, you're going to look for a vehicle that charges quickly. That's a big deal. So you're not sitting at a charger for a very long time. And for that purpose, Hyundai, Genesis, Kia vehicles are very good. And then you get more expensive, but your Mercedes and BMW cars charge very quickly. And your new GM products that are coming online, the Lyric, the Cadillac Lyric, the Chevy Blazer, those vehicles are also going to charge very quickly. You're going to want fast charging if you're going to travel away from home.
Mm-hmm. And the question about different types of cars between, a coupe and an SUV, things like that. What do they vary in quality and in driving in the electric world?
No, electric anything is pretty much about the same. I don't think it matters if it's a sedan or a crossover. And in fact, I just drove the Hyundai Ioniq 5 and the Hyundai Ioniq 6 back-to-back, and the 5 is a compact crossover. The 6 is a sedan about the size of a Honda Accord. The big, big difference between the two was that actually that the 6, the sedan, was a little bit less expensive and had better range. Just because of the better aerodynamics. So that was a thing to think about, too. I really like that vehicle, by the way, the Hyundai Ioniq 6. Nice car.
We were in the Ioniq 5 at the auto show. We're going to get to that in a second. We were in the car when someone drove it. We drove in the Ioniq 5. We didn't do the Ioniq 6. We went in the Ioniq 5. I'll tell you about that when we talk about the auto show, which we had a blast at, by the way. But anyway, you mentioned interesting thing here. Milwaukee, not a great place for charging vehicles. Are there a lot of major cities like Milwaukee that are behind in terms of the time frame where they should be for charging in electric vehicles and things like that? Are there more electric vehicle friendly cities than others?
Yeah, this uncomfortably becomes a little bit political. And for a major city, Milwaukee isn't quite as liberal or EV progressive as other cities. So in the Chicago area, where manufacturers and charging, people expect EVs to be here, and they are. Yeah. And there's a lot of good charging in the Chicago area.
Because it's Chicago, and we're in Illinois, so yes.
Yep.
That's as progressive as you can get.
And if you're in Southern California, you can charge anywhere.
Anywhere.
And then you have weird states like Texas, where Austin is like an EV an EV love fest. But if you leave Austin, it gets a little dicier.
Right.
And then there's Miami is strong, D.C. is big, New York is big, and then California, and then Portland and Seattle. Those are great cities to be driving EVs.
Okay. So Sarah in Milwaukee, not going to get the best support in terms of charging, and might want to get a charger for her garage, something like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely going to want a home charger.
All right, cool. Get a home charger. Okay. By the way, speaking of charging, let's do this story first before we do a recap of the 2024 Chicago Auto Show. We're talking about charging, and we're talking about charging stations. Interesting little update on Tesla and their chargers. Big story here. The Tesla chargers are now going to be opened up so that Ford owners can use them. This is a big story, right?
It's a big story, and there are 9 total manufacturers that have jumped on board. Tesla is in a position now where it's not going to see dramatic sales growth. So to continue their revenue stream or to protect it, they're going to start making money off their charging network, which was previously available only to Tesla owners. And it's also famously reliable, and their chargers are fast, and they absolutely did the charging thing correctly. And we've been waiting for, you know, companies like EVgo and ChargePoint and Electrify America to get their act together, and they haven't. So manufacturers interested in protecting their EV investment are making it possible for the owners of their electric vehicles to use the charger network, the Tesla supercharger network, and Ford is the first.
Okay.
So effective now, if you own a Ford Mustang Mach-E or a Ford Lightning pickup, you can go online and apply for a free charger converter. It's a block about the size of a double hip flask. It's about that big.
Okay.
And it goes between the Tesla charger and your vehicle. The first one is free. After that, they're $230 a pop. But I've seen them work. There's a company... media outlet called EV Pulse that has already used the system, and it works very well. So it'll use the software on your Ford. You won't have to start up a new account with Tesla. It'll use your Ford account.
Wow.
And it'll charge, and it's very quick, it's very effective, and this is going to save, I think, the EV movement.
Is this something you're going to see from a lot of other, is this going to happen where corporations and car manufacturers actually combine their efforts so that everybody can use? Are we going to see universal chargers at some point?
We are. And what's going to happen, too, there's a company now that has just been formed. It's a non-for-profit called Iona, and it's a conglomerate of 9 different manufacturers of EV vehicles building out their own network. Because, again, they're tired of the public charging infrastructure the way it is right now. And they're going to prioritize, if you make a reservation to use a charger using the app, they will prioritize the people who use, you know, who are own their own vehicles.
Sure.
But anyone can use them.
Wow. Okay. All right. And is this consistent with what we expect the time frame to be? Or are we a little bit behind? Should these manufacturers and should these companies doing the electric vehicles, should they be further along now than they are?
Yes, I think so. Electrify America, for example, builds stations that are very small, sometimes a single unit or four unit stations, and yeah. they put them in places where there's fairly high demand. And there's one, for example, in Lake Zurich, Illinois, in the parking lot of a bank, and that one is always, always full. So people have to wait to use that. And so it's good that it's being used and it's good that it's there, but Tesla is famous for its 20 unit stations. So that's 20 cars in a row. And
yeah.
and interestingly, Teslas don't slow down. Tesla stations don't slow down if a lot of people line up and park, where Electrify America stations do. So the line gets longer. It's a problem. They just have the one power input. They didn't really plan for multiple use. So yeah, the Tesla situation is really a huge movement forward.
Yeah, and now, of course, you know, people are now thinking, well, you know, remember we had that deep freeze a few weeks ago,
yeah.
And you know, Tesla took a real hit on that. But you did explain, you know, what the problem was, and it wasn't really Tesla's fault. During that deep freeze when people couldn't charge their and they were dead and the cars were dead and they couldn't charge and all that other stuff. But you explained it pretty well. If people want to be a little bit reminded of that.
Yeah, simply put, the cars, Tesla owners were not prepared for what had happened, and the extreme cold compromised their range, and their vehicles were so depleted, the batteries were so depleted, they couldn't warm up enough to be charged. And when people plugged in, it took forever for the charging to begin because the battery still had to be warmed up from, you know, 10 or 20 degrees below zero.
Right, right.
So the whole process was nightmarish, and owners probably needed to learn just a little bit more about their cars. And as we discussed last time we talked about this, there are stations in colder places in Canada and in Norway and other parts of Northern Europe where it gets this cold and colder, and the stations work just fine.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, big news, though. Ford EV owners can now use Tesla chargers, and we're moving forward on that, even if it's a little bit behind the times. But that's a big story, and you can read you can read all about it in its details, in its entirety, at Consumer Guide Automotive. Okay. You mentioned the Ioniq 6 that you were driving. Well, we went to my girlfriend, Julie, who has never, in all her years, had never been to an auto show. I don't know how that happened. And it was my first auto show in decades, I would imagine. It was actually the first auto show that I went to just to visit and spend hours there, as opposed to just show up and do a remote broadcast and then leave. Because I've done auto shows, because when GN used to broadcast from there, I sat in and hosted a few remotes at the auto show, but really didn't check out didn't do the whole day like we did last
year. Right.
We went on Super Bowl Sunday is when we went. So, February 11th, I believe, was Super Bowl Sunday. So we went on Super Bowl Sunday, I had a great time. I loved it. Now, what was your thoughts, your review of the 2024 Chicago Auto Show, which was at McCormick Place? It, you know, every time I mention it to people, they're like, it's much smaller than it used to be. Now, is that actually true, or are we just remembering it to be bigger?
It was more crowded than it used to be, which probably gave it a sense of size, especially when it used to be Lakeside at the other McCormick Place venue there, which was a very strange venue. And that used to be so small that they used to put trucks downstairs.
Right.
I don't know if people remember that.
I remember that. I do. Yeah.
But the South Hall in the main building is something like 800,000 square feet or something like that. And they punched out the back wall this year to keep the whole thing in the same room.
Yeah.
Now, we did lose Stellantis this year for a number of reasons. Stellantis is a parent company of Dodge, Ram, Jeep, Chrysler, Fiat, and Alfa Romeo and Maserati. So those brands were not there this year. So that was missing. And that's a big deal. That's a lot of brands. But everyone else was basically there. And I thought the show was great, actually. A little bit airier, not quite as confined.
Yeah.
But you know, most of the stuff that you need to see, it was there, and it was fun.
Yeah. No, we had a great time, and we did the whole thing. We were there for like 5.5 hours and, jumped into cars and, took a bunch of pictures and, during the they had some test driving places, areas in there. So the Hyundai had the Ioniq 6 and the Ioniq 5 and another one, too, that they tested. There were three, if I remember, there were three vehicles that you could get in the car while someone drove you around like a track. And gave you a little spiel about the car, and you could ask questions and stuff like that. We got in the Ioniq 5 and thought that vehicle was really cool, and we had a very charming, very young driver. I can't remember what his name was, but he had a lovely accent, and and was being very flirty with my girlfriend, which was, I thought was pretty lovely. But yeah, so the INF5, we liked it. We thought it drove well. We liked the way it looked, the way it felt. How do you feel about the 5 as opposed to the 6?
The 5 is the more practical vehicle. I might choose the 6 just because of the better range, and I love the styling. Styling very controversial because it's extremely aerodynamic, and that bobtail thing that's going on in the 6,
yeah,
is, that's very controversial.
Yeah,
but the 5, super practical, and as you probably noticed, because there is no tailpipe and no drive shaft, the floor is very flat, so you can
absolutely
slide across the vehicle easier. It feels roomier and airier.
It does.
On long trips, you're not worried about where you put your feet. So good use of space, and that a lot of that comes from the fact that it's electric. But that car is fun to drive, pretty modern looking. The interior materials are a little disappointing, but they got to cut costs someplace. EVs are still expensive to produce.
And how do you feel about getting in a car being test driven by somebody else?
Because
when we were in line, Julie's like, "Oh, are they going to let us drive?" And I'm like, "I don't think so. I don't think they're going to let us drive. Because what's going to prevent us from like gunning it and smashing through the barriers and doing 90 down Lakeshore Drive, in the car?"
There's some way, and I don't even remember how this works, but there are outside EV drives by some manufacturers.
Yeah.
And I think you basically have to be super interested and invited to do that.
Right. Right,
yeah.
But they're not going to let any Tom, Dick, and Harry who's standing in line in McCormick Place get behind the vehicle with an Ioniq 5 and just drive it. So how do you feel? Do you ever get into cars that are being test driven by somebody else?
I do, yeah.
And you do? How do you feel about that?
It's often as frustrating as you might expect.
Yeah.
I'm either irritated that the guy's always got his foot on the gas or going too slow, and I'm like, what are you learning from this? Yeah,
I thought of you while we were in the car because we weren't driving it, and this other dude was who, by the way, that guy probably drove that thing around 8 million times during that day. And, and we were, because we got to him, it was kind of a little bit less than halfway through our visit. So we were there for a couple of hours, at that point, or an hour and a half. So maybe his shift had just started because he seemed really happy. But can you imagine... Like the 900th time you're driving around that goddamn track and somebody gets in, you're like, yeah, this is the Ioniq 5. If you like it, cool. If you don't, get out. You know what I mean? Like I've been driving this damn thing for 5 hours. I can't imagine just going around that circle inside that building over and over and over again all day, not affecting your presentation as a vehicle driver.
No, and I'm sure, too, because most people are starting on EVs from kind of like ground zero. He's getting the same questions.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, Do EVs really burst into flames?
Yeah, I can't imagine. So yes, there's a sense of frustration for a person who drives new cars for a living to get into a car for like a 5-minute test drive, I would imagine. That's got to be. Now, I will say this, they had different stations set up for test driving and all that cool stuff, and there was one all the way in the back that was specifically for electric vehicles. There was Hyundai, but the one that was center was Ford, and Ford had the giant hill that you could take your big trucks up and then go down, and that was the longest line for any like sort of test vehicle, because you're going to get in the car and go up this giant hill and then go up these other like things where at one point all four wheels are off the ground and you're flipping, So what's that like? And those are big, terrain vehicles that you're driving around in, with a giant hill in the middle of, right in the middle of McCormick Place that almost reaches the ceiling. It's like a roller coaster in the middle of the auto show. What are your thoughts on Ford's display?
Yeah, and Jeep does that too. Jeep used to do Camp Jeep, and I think that'll be back next year. And it was the same thing. And one of the highlights of the auto show is listening to the creaking of the track as these vehicles climb up them. And every now and then someone will scream. But I love that stuff. And it does highlight. I think that from a sort of a practical matter, I don't think they're actually demonstrating that much, because the surface of that track is pretty much easy to grip to.
Yeah.
But it does make a point that these vehicles are very capable. And if you're talking about the Ford Bronco, it is very capable off-road.
Yeah.
So it is a cool experience.
Yeah. No, and people were going nuts. And we were standing there for a few minutes just watching it, and it was cool. And I don't know who gets chosen to drive those cars. That's my question. It's like, you know what I mean? Because I saw like people with there was a dude with like purple hair and a weird bandana on, and he was the test driver. I'm like, I don't trust that guy. You know, like, he looks like a weird, of course, I'm going to trust person on visuals because I'm a jerk. But I'm like, I don't know. I want, like, a professional. If we're going to go over that giant hill in the middle of, I don't want to die in McCormick Place on a giant hill driving a Bronco for no reason.
I actually don't know how they choose people for that. Yeah. I have, over the years, I know that Jeep, for example, maintains a team of off-road experts to demonstrate Jeep prowess over different places.
Okay.
And Land Rover, Range Rover does as well. And actually, I know those guys because I've worked on them with projects. And,
yeah.
And these guys are extremely, extremely good at what they do. But I don't know, you know, in Chicago, and you probably don't want to pay a lot of airfare to get people in, I don't know where they get drivers.
I got to find out.
See,
Tom, could you do that, please? Because that was the first thing in my head. I said, where the hell do they find these drivers, you know? And it was fun. And so that part was really great. But the line was too long. We did not get into one of those. Because there was a Bronco, and there were like three other vehicles. What would the other vehicles be where they're testing over these obstacles and over the hill besides the Bronco?
Well, they used to do the Wrangler and the Jeep pickup when Jeep was there, but they also do versions of the F Series pickup. So probably the F-150. In Tremor trim, which is off road ready.
Yeah, yeah. I was surprised at just how damn big some of those trucks are. I mean, they are huge. I was in front of, and this was Ford. I think this was Ford. I'm almost positive it was Ford because Ford really was heavy on trucks. And I remember, like, Julie took a picture of me in front of the hood, you know, of a pickup. And the damn thing was taller than me. Like, it was like, like, I was like, my God, how do you? And the other question was, like, sometimes we would climb in. Like, how the hell do you get into these vehicles? Some of them are just so high off the ground. I mean, that comes into effect when you're going to buy a vehicle. And a guy of your size, Tom, because you're a big dude, what's it like to get in and out of cars like that? Do you even test drive those kind of things?
I do, actually, and I recently drove, I get commercial vehicles sometimes, and those are a hoot, but I recently drove the Ram 2500, so 3/4 ton, this is a heavy-duty truck, in Rebel, which is kind of off-roady, sporty trim, and getting in and out, I got a bum knee right now, so getting in and out of that was a total nightmare. But people have to want to do that.
And
I've talked to Ford engineers and Ram engineers, and every new generation of a vehicle is incrementally larger because that's what shoppers seem to want.
Isn't that crazy?
They would reject a vehicle if it shrank a little bit.
And that's the thing, though, man. Those cars were surrounded by people. Those giant cars, swarms of people around them. You know, it was crazy. And like, I mean, the cars were bigger and bigger and, you know, and I don't know. And what were some of the, who do you think had the best? And I will tell you what I thought the best area was and the best display was. But who do you think did the best and what were some of the best displays that were out there?
Well, obviously Subaru killed
That's
it again.
That's
yeah.
it.
Subaru wins an award every year from the auto show.
My God,
because
man.
Because they do such a great job.
Oh.
And then you have the really, really product-packed Toyota. Display, which is right by the main concourse there.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how many products they can cram into that. But Toyota also sells something like 19 different models in the U.S., so they've got a lot to show.
Yeah, yeah. It was just so much fun to walk around. And I also love, like, the displays that they have for, like, real cars that you can't even get in and touch them. You know, these crazy-ass cars that are, like, you know, $250,000 and, you know, you can take pictures of them and look at them. And then they have the guys who own the cars there. Like, there's badass. Like, they had a whole Camaro thing set up, which was really cool to walk around that. And then there's, like, all these crazy-ass Lambos and all these in crazy cars that you can see. And that's always a lot of fun. Do you like looking at the insane cars, you know, the Porsches and the Lamborghinis and things like that?
I do. I regard Porsches sort of differently from Lamborghini and Ferrari and things like that because Porsches are a little bit more practical and they do sell consumer level products, though they're very expensive. But Lamborghinis and Ferraris are just sort of weird to me. There's so much money and there's this great sort of hypocrisy there now where they're supposed to be the pinnacle of sports car performance, and yet they're not even offered with manual transmissions anymore because no one who buys these things knows how to drive stick. So you have these fantastic cars, and by all accounts, Ferraris are fantastic cars, but they're not really being driven the way they're supposed to be.
Yeah, it was fun to look at them, I got to say. It was like, that's pretty cool. It was a lot of fun to look at them, but there's no practicality involved in any of that stuff, you know what I mean?
But I will say, silly.
Oh my God, ridiculous. Totally ridiculous. But like stuff was shiny and like I got behind a 2024, I got behind the wheel of a 2024 Mustang and that made me very happy. Yeah. I enjoyed that. And the one that they had up on the revolving, you know, that Ford had up the Mustang that they had on the revolving stage. Oh my God, what a beautiful car. Oh my God. I almost passed out.
That is basically, Ford stopped building its GT performance, high performance sports car, and this version of the Mustang now basically takes its place.
It's so badass,
and it's more affordable. It looks so cool.
Oh, it's so badass! Like, it was funny because, like, one of the reasons why I think Julie and I get along so well is that, like, the car that she loved the most was about 20 feet away from the car that I love the most, and they're both named after horses. Because she, I liked the Mustang, she liked the Bronco. I was like, okay, no wonder we're together. That works out well.
That's a nice garage. That's a good garage.
But I got to say, you know, we mentioned it. Subaru, their setup was unbelievable. The whole rainforest theme, the way it was set up, how they had the cars, they showed the cars in different, you know, locations and how they would work here and how they would work there. The way they were set up, I mean, just a beautiful, beautiful setup. I mean, the most impressive, the most immersive use of screens and everything. I was unbelievably impressed with Subaru. And on top of that, they had dogs there that you could adopt. So if it's not enough that they had the coolest setup, but also they had 800 people standing there looking at dogs, and which no other, you know, car company in the entire place had a big pen full of dogs.
Yeah, I think if you go and check all the social media from the auto show, a third of it is puppies.
Yeah, puppies, cute puppies. I should have specified.
Yeah, they're adorable.
They are. And then halfway through, though, we were walking through and Julie found this. It was like, oh, look at this. And they had massage chairs. And we did the 15-minute free massage chair thing because we've been walking around for 2 hours. And let me just say, I recommend that to anybody who goes to the auto show. If they've got the big setup where you can sit down for 15 minutes and be completely massaged by a machine for free, do it.
I have not availed myself of that. And I saw them this year, and I thought, that looks nice.
It's fantastic. And it was halfway through. We were there for 5.5 hours at around the 2 hour, 2.5 hour mark. We sat for 15 minutes in a chair and got massaged. We were ready to go for the second half. It was great. It was great. So a scale of 1 to 10, where would you rank this past year's Chicago Auto Show?
Relative to all the auto shows I've been to, I'd give it an 8.
Yeah, it was, yeah, and it's been years for me. That's cool.
Solid good time.
I'm glad that a car expert had as much. Oh, by the way, that VW retro van bus was the coolest thing I've ever seen. Wasn't that thing amazing?
Yeah, the ID Buzz. Oh. That is not the version. We're going to get a slightly longer version in the U.S. And there's some crazy stories about why we don't have it yet. Yeah. It's all political at Volkswagen, and we should get it. It would sell well. It's delightful.
So cool. And that's another one that had a crowd around it. People were just like all over it. That was, besides the Mustang, that was my favorite vehicle of the day, without question.
Also, and unlike the original microbus, this won't suck to drive.
I got behind the wheel. It seemed cool. You know, I didn't drive it or anything, but it seemed pretty cool. So that was, and visually just lovely and really fun and retro. It's a great looking vehicle. It was a lot of fun. So
they nailed that.
So here's a big story though. We want to get to before we talk about StarSpotter and other stuff. The Chinese car makers are trying to sneak into the U.S. market. What's the story? This is a big story, an important story, correct?
Yeah, it's just under the main headlines, but it's going to be a big deal, and it's going to become a political hot potato. But Chinese car makers are setting up camp in Mexico, where right now they're setting up supplier companies, so tier one, tier two suppliers that are supplying the auto manufacturers in Mexico. And there are a lot of auto manufacturers in Mexico. But BYD, one of the largest car companies in the world, secretly, which is 10% owned by Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's company, is looking to set up a full assembly plant to build electric vehicles in Mexico. Mm. The reason this matters is because to import a car directly from China to the U.S., that car would be subject to a 27.5% tariff, which pretty much makes it impossible to do. But if they go to Mexico, thanks to the USMCA trade agreement, the trade agreement that replaced NAFTA, they would be able to build cars in Mexico and theoretically export them to the U.S. without the tariff. And this is freaking people out because BYD is famous for building very, very affordable electric cars. They sell a vehicle called the Dolphin that sells for about $12,000.
The Dolphin? Wow.
The Dolphin, yeah. Wow. And there's no way they would be able to sell it for 12 grand in the US for a bunch of stuff. They'd have to make it crash worthy, and there's other considerations. But still, that price is absolutely frightening, because American manufacturers are still struggling to sell electric vehicles, you know, for 35 grand.
Right.
Very interesting development here. BYD has gone on record and said they have no interest in selling cars in the US, but that might be like no interest this year.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah.
We'll see where that goes. But
so you're keeping an eye on it. Eye on this story. Okay.
It's going to be a big deal.
Okay. So keep an eye on that, and you can check out the latest at Consumer Guide Automotive as well. And also, you love to do the check out old ads and crazy ads. You got an ad for the 1974 Jeep CJ5, which has Levi's content in it. Would you care to explain this? And everybody, you can check out the visuals and check out these ads at the Daily Drive blog, which is at Consumer Guide Automotive. But tell me a little bit about the Jeep CJ5.
Yeah, this is just one of my favorite print ads, and I've been collecting those for years. But this is basically an ad for the CJ5, a very serious off-roader, a very crude, basic vehicle. Absolute joy to drive back in the day. Yeah. But it was available with Levi's, licensed Levi's leather denim interior, which was all the rage. We just talked about American Motors, and they started doing this in the early 70s, and it was in the Hornet.
Right.
The Hornet was an AMC, and other vehicles. And, it had the brass rivets, and it had the orange tags, and it was a full-fledged Levi-style interior, and it was incredibly popular for a little while.
Wow. And you can check it out. The ad is the ad is fantastic. I love that you put these ads in. You have a treasure trove of old ads, and some of them are absolutely hilarious. Yeah, as long as you get the Levi's, and it's official. It's official. It's not fake Levi's. This is the real deal. Yeah,
that's the real deal. Yeah, licensed.
Check it out. The 1974 Jeep CJS. Now, Star Spotter. Tom likes to watch old TV. Likes to watch westerns in particular. And to the chagrin of his wife, he likes to take pictures of the TV, screenshots of the TV when a star shows up on a show, and you hashtag it Star Spotter. So let's talk a little bit about a couple of the stars that you saw, that you spotted since the last time we spoke.
One of the funniest things I've seen on TV in a long time was James Cromwell. Cromwell on Barney Miller. And this was hilarious because James Cromwell played some sort of muckety-muck from the U.S. Department of Energy. And they had taken over a building that had an active brothel in it. And because they didn't know what to do with the brothel, they just continued to run it.
So James Cromwell was a pimp then.
He was basically a pimp and a guy who knew a lot about conserving electricity. Absolutely awesome.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right, and then one of my favorites ever. Seriously, my buddies and I don't know why we're so fascinated and we love this guy, but we adore John Saxon. He's one of my favorite character actors ever. And so John Saxon showed up on a couple of things, right?
Yeah, I saw them the same night.
Oh my God. A Saxon double feature. What a gift. Yeah. What a gift.
So we had John Saxon on Quincy playing, not surprisingly, a bad guy. And on Bonanza playing a Native American Indian, because that's what guys did in those days.
Right.
I think John Saxon played a lot of Indian characters.
He did. His real name is Carmen Arrico. He's Italian. But he has an olive skin. John Saxon has olive skin. He played a lot of Native Americans in westerns and on TV a lot. He did it to the point where people actually thought he was, you know, a Native American. He starred in a lot of movies. So on Bonanza he played a Native American, and then on Quincy he was just a bad guy.
He was just like a white mobster kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah. And of course he was a robot. Everybody remembers he was a robot on $6 Million Man, if I'm not mistaken.
Because he was also in the original Battlestar Galactica, I believe.
He was in everything. John Saxon, amazing.
Dude got around.
He did. And then you do hashtag mystery show, where you take like a still from a show and then kind of publish it and see if people can guess what it is. Now, the one that you put up there, I think would have been easy for me to guess because I watched it all the time. But which one did you do?
It was easy for everybody. It was guessed immediately. I was not allowed to watch this as a child. Mary Hartman.
That's right. Yeah.
Which I just realized was Norman Lear. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's because you don't realize it was Norman Lear. One, because it was syndicated. Two, because it was so weird, there was no laugh track. And because it was syndicated here in Chicago, it was on at like 10:30 at night on Channel 32.
Yeah, it had some weird affiliation, both in terms of being booked on TV and I think content-wise with Fernwood Tonight.
They were connected. Because Mary Hartman took place in Fernwood. And the spinoff was the TV show that people watched in Fernwood, the fictional TV show that people watched in Fernwood. And then that was Martin Mull and Fred Willard.
Yeah.
And so that was like a spin-off in the universe, if you will. It was Marvel before Marvel. It was a spin-off in the Mary Hartman universe, in the Fernwood Tonight world.
Also, I'm just going to say this, and you feel free to contradict me, but almost nothing on TV was ever funnier than Fred Willard on Fernwood Tonight.
You could probably say that about everything that Fred Willard did. Like, seriously. There was kind of nothing funnier on the planet than Fred Willard at times. Like, he was... Yeah, and I agree with you. I agree with you 1,000%. The kind of satire that he did as the second banana, brilliant. Just brilliant. Yeah. All right, cool. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Tom. We always have a great time. Everybody can follow you. Tell everybody where they can follow you on the social medias and the Facebooks and all that.
Yeah, I am Car Guy Tom on Twitter. I tend to post everything that I do there, so that's a great place to follow me. Or just check us out at consumerguide.com.
All right, Tom, I'll talk to you next month. Thank you, my friend.
Sounds good, thanks.
All right, there you go. That's Tom Appel. He's the best. And thank you for listening, everybody. And my thanks to Herb Weisbaum for helping us out on yet another For the People episode. Hey, be a sponsor on this podcast. It reaches a lot of people, so do it. sales@radiomisfits.com. You will leave a voicemail message or an email. Please do that. 773-417-6948 for your voicemail. Email us, nickdpodcast@gmail.com. Jason Skaggs does all the music and the sound and the themes. Ed Silla does everything else. Check out our 24-hour streaming service at radiomisfits.live. Share, rate, review us all on every platform, and we'll see you next time when Marnie Shore is going to be my guest from The Takeout. We have a lot of food stuff to talk about and much, much more. And that's all coming up on the next episode of the Nick D Podcast. Thanks, everybody.